You are listening to the Improv Saved My Life podcast, brought to you on Bits, the Boston Improv Talk Station. All right, welcome to episode 80 of the Improv Saved My Life podcast. I'm your host, Tom Boyer. This podcast is brought to you on Bits, the Boston Improv Talk Station. Two guests this week, both kind of based out of Improv Boston. We have Amy Frizzy. What's going on, Amy?
Hello.
How are you?
I'm well. How are you?
Good, thanks. Amy is a cast member of Face Off at Improv Boston on Saturday nights at 10. I checked that out once. I saw a show with Ari, and I thought it was really good.
Ari's great. Ari left right when I joined. I don't know if it's related, but I hope not.
I actually have like a slightly less flattering opinion of Ari. Big troublemaker. Like, you know.
Yeah. Well, only when it comes to the environment.
Leftist, you know, real Che Guevara type. You know?
Yeah. Ari's the nicest human being either one of us has ever met.
Yeah, that's true.
I had Ari. He just filled in for a level one that I was taking at IB, and I was just like, oh, this is a cool dude, and I just hit him up for the podcast right after that.
He's great.
Yeah, yes, yes.
I'm a big fan.
Amy is also a founder of Baby Giraffes, which is an all-female sketch comedy group that was founded in 2012.
That's true. That's exactly true.
Members include Annie Kazakowicz.
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 Damn it.
try more difficult last name. I want to see how you do on this.
Ashley Serendigi.
Ashley Serendigi. That was perfect. We literally all have just like nightmare last names.
Caitlin Durante and Holly Tarnauer.
Oh, you knew that one, didn't you? Yeah.
Why Tarnauer?
And our other guest, whose voice you've heard, is Jack McNamara. What's going on, Jack?
Hey, how you doing, man?
Doing good. Jack is on the Harold Knight, Improv Boston Harold Knight, Fresh Blend Team Nixon.
Which is based on Jack McNamara's impersonation of Nixon. Jack,
it's really not. No, it's
just
really not.
Do it. Jack, just do the impersonation.
Fuck. Okay. What do you want me to say? Like,
Henry, they keep on saying that I'm a crook. I'm not a crook.
See, it's a terrible impersonation, well, but everyone loves it. So.
It's not really an impersonation of Nixon proper, as it is like Billy West from Futurama doing Nixon. That's what, and Billy West's impersonation was always based on the premise that Nixon is slowly turning into a werewolf.
Do you do a lot of impersonations? I feel like I've seen you do like a Jimmy Stewart type before.
Oh,
no,
yeah.
That's just his voice.
Yeah. People keep on telling me that. Like, I can, like, I mean, like...
Oh, can we take a quick time out?
Sure,
yeah.
So, the Baby Giraffes, or Baby Giraffes, we're not going to use the...
Okay.
We used to have our sketch writers meetings at Bukowski's in Inman Square,
oh,
like,
God,
way
no.
back in the day. And, one day after, like, you know, several hot toddies, we were just like, let's write a sketch called Jack McNamara Gets a Blowjob. And we all just started making...
We're just going right into it.
We
like...
just started making the sound effects. And we were just like, and then we realized we were like, no, we would have to change this to Jimmy Stewart Gets a Blowjob.
Keep your penis in the mouth.
We wanted the mass appeal. Less teeth.
I've had my penis in your mouth. And in Shirley's mouth. And in Marcia's mouth.
It's been everywhere. Literally.
It's really our penis.
Do you use that as an improv warm-up, though?
No, we were going to write that as a sketch.
The
we were going to
Baby Giraffes before Major
stage.
Midley can maybe be seen at the Boston Comedy Arts Festival. Jack
we're
McNamara.
We're on a bit of a hiatus.
Jack McNamara will not be in attendance.
Oh, God. That was like 3 years ago, though, that we were going to do that. We didn't.
You know,
didn't.
Tom, I think I'm in another group, too. But
you were also in Left McNamara.
That's right.
Hey.
Yeah.
Shout out to Brian Donnelly.
Brian Donnelly,
the other half of Laugh.
The other half of Laugh McNamara. I feel like I always need to point out whenever I talk about Laugh McNamara is that I did not come up with the name for Laugh McNamara.
He didn't. You would think because he's like an egomaniac.
Because like I'm uncontrollable, right? Like, you know, everything's got to be about me all the time. I have no humility whatsoever. Actually,
but Brian feeds into that. Brian is like the worst when it comes to you.
Well, that's why it works out so great. That's why we're such a fun, dynamic duo to watch. On Friday, May 14th, 15th, at Improv Boston Cage Match,
the 15th,
yeah, the Ides of May, yeah. Don't beware, come in and join, yeah, won't laugh, yeah.
Some of these Improv Boston indie team names throw me, like Devlin Down,
does not feature Andy Devlin.
Nope.
But then there's the Mighty Zevlin, which
does feature Andy Devlin.
And then there's several people named Devin.
There's just one person named Devin.
Devin Quinlan.
He's just also egocentric.
A member of Nixon, which you can see every other Wednesday at Harold Night on Wednesdays at 9:30.
Sometimes 7:30.
Sometimes 7:30. I noticed that, like, a lot of cage match teams, like, you know, back at, like, it's so weird because now there is so much more of an indie scene at IB.
Well, everyone wants to do a two-person.
Yeah,
like,
no,
that's the thing, is, like, everyone wants to do a two-person.
Everyone's
but it's so, like, I feel super, like, I feel like it's middle school all over again, and, like, everyone has picked who they want to do the we're fathering and mothering, like a bag of flour. Like, they're doing that project all over again, and I'm just, like, the teacher has to assign me to somebody.
I just feel.
I don't do it too, man.
I just feel it's laziness. It's like, hey, do you want to do an improv show? Yeah. Okay, well, I guess we're a team. It's like, you know, it's like, can't be bothered to find a third person. No, sorry, we're already an improv team.
Well, the other thing, too, is, like, rehearsal schedule is awful. Like, I very often feel like way too much of my personal time is spent filling out doodles for rehearsals for,
right.
like, shows or rehearsals or what the fuck ever it is. Like, I just am on doodle way too often.
Oh, yeah. No, that's, like, that's...
I almost use... that's, like, a humble brag. I understand where you're coming with this.
Yeah. Whenever I get doodles, like, the doodles I get have way too many dates on them. It's like, so much so that Doodle feels compelled to comment on this. It's like, this has a bit more options than normal.
I've been booking a lot of shows lately, and I'll have the lineup down, and then I'll get an email the day before, like, because I'll send, like, a event notification out, mm-hmm. and like, hey, I didn't see such and such on it, and I'm like, ah, oh, shit, I didn't tell him I was going to put him on the show. And then it's like, re-figure out the lineup, and it's hard to keep track of everything.
Yeah, man, it's rough. Well, like, it's hard because, like, we all have day jobs.
Right.
You know?
Speak for yourself.
We all have day jobs, or some of us freelance.
Yeah. Jack-McNamara.com. Okay. Available for hire. Yeah.
So, we were just talking about cage match. Jack was my first, the first person I associated with Improv Boston.
Really?
Yeah, because the first time I ever went to IB was at EagleCon. One of my groups did a cage match. I'd never seen a show there before.
Okay.
And it seems to be that Jack just turned out to be hosting that night. But I always thought he was the host of Cage Match up until 5 minutes ago.
Yeah,
no, that's Connor Allen.
That's so weird because, like, I actually live down the street from Improv Boston, so it's not uncommon for me to be walking around or, like, going anywhere. Like, even if I have to go to the T, like, you know, like, I have to go past IB. So, like, sometimes I'll just drop in there on that particular night. Like, I run into Connor, and Connor and I know each other from way back when. Like, our
Buskers.
Yeah. Our first casting was together on the Buskers back in 2011. And so, anyway, I run into Connor that night, and apparently, I guess Danny's not there for whatever reason. And so, Connor just comes up to me, and he's like, Buskers. Hey, you want to host Cage Match? And, like, me being me, I'm like, yeah, sure. And I'm terrible at it, so.
Also,
like,
Jack's impersonation of himself is fucking gold. Can we hear that one more time, Jack?
What, just like, the one I just right now,
yeah.
Like, where I'm like, you know.
Yeah, sure.
Where I'm like, like the Butters version of Jack McNamara.
Butters, like, is terrible.
Well, hey there, fellas. How you doing?
It's so bad.
Of course I'll host Cage Match with you. This sounds great.
And then I think I propagated this myth because my group did the show at the Cambridge YMCA. I think it's a 7-Eleven right near there.
Yeah, I lived down the street from that too.
And I was in there. I'm like, I went to a teammate who I was in the 7-Eleven with. I'm like, hey, that's the guy that does the Cage Match.
That's the guy.
You know what's really funny? I hope that, like, you keep dropping clues, like maybe, like, National Treasure style, so that by the end, like, whoever's listening will, like, figure out your exact address.
You can find me, man. I mean, like, you know, I post...
No, you're ruining the mystique!
Like, speaking of which, you know, actually my roommate, there's a giant poster of her right there, Mish Whitaker, like, right there. Yeah.
Oh, awesome. I had Mish on... couple months ago.
I listened to that one, yeah.
Yeah, she's really an impressive person.
Yeah. No, she is, like, oh, God. There's very little not to love about Mish. Like, she's, like, super peppy. She's super bubbly. She helps everyone. She's got a heart of gold. She's constantly busy. She is a full-time nurse. She runs her own theater that works with the homeless, and she's also doing improv shows.
She's also, like, easily the funniest woman I've ever seen on stage. It's, like, between her and Marty Johnson.
She's fantastic.
They're just fucking hysterical.
I was telling Frizz this on the ride over. Like, I had, like, an encapsulating Mish Whitaker moment yesterday where I was cleaning out so I'm an advertising creative. Like, that's one of the things. Right now I'm a freelance copywriter. About 6 months back, like we needed like a bunch of rubber ducks for like this shoot that we were creating.
Uh-huh.
We never ended up using it because, good news, we could Photoshop in the rubber ducks. So here's me 6 months later doing spring cleaning up, like, and I have this bag of rubber ducks. I'm like, hey, Mish, yeah, you need some rubber ducks? And she's like, actually, I do.
I remember interviewing her, and she just casually was like, this is back when I was working with Patch Adams. I'm like, what?
Oh, she's also got a story. She's also got a story for everything. Like, you know, there's nothing quite like a Mish Whitaker segue, because you're going to, like, start at A and wind up at, like, the Greek Delta sign.
So why don't we get a little bit of both of your backgrounds. Amy, why don't we start with you? Where are you from originally?
Oh, I am from Malden, Massachusetts.
Nice.
Which is a classy area.
Shout out. Home of Malden Mills.
To Malden. Home of me. I want to be the person who's known for being from Malden, but it's actually not me. It's the guys who sang, you know that song, Malden World.
Oh, Extreme.
Extreme is from Malden, so I have to surpass Extreme if I ever want to be like the pride of Malden.
It's a
high bar.
I was a huge, I'm 36, so that, they hit right when it seemed appropriate to listen to Extreme.
Right, yeah.
I've never heard of Extreme until this moment.
And
that's not like a put down, by the way.
So their big hits were on their second album, which was called Porno Graffiti, which is a weird album title for
the type of band that they
They wrote love ballads.
Yeah, they wrote songs that like you would totally listen to in front of your mom, and she'd be like, "That's nice."
But there's like an album cover is like a little schoolboy in like Times Square and like old ghetto Times Square with like graffiti everywhere and like hookers.
Oh yeah,
and I'm like
pre Giuliani Times Square.
Yeah, and I'm just like, what does this have to do with the band Extreme?
I don't know. I mean, maybe they were reminiscing of Malden. What's really funny is that I dated a guy in high school who will like swear up and down that one of the guys from Extreme babysat him when he was a child, and I was like, no, when we were children, they were already like a thing.
Right.
You know what I mean? Like that song came out in like what? 1991, 1992.
Yeah.
So I was born in 86. He was born in 86. I was like, there's no way that they were like,
unless
you were an infant. And you wouldn't remember that.
One of them, Gary Sharon, went on to be the head singer of Van Halen for one CD. And it didn't go over well.
What?
Yeah.
No.
What?
Okay. So Van Halen, the absolute best part of Van Halen, and we're talking only David Lee Roth songs, is that in like 99.9% of the songs, you get the David Lee Roth spoken word.
Oh, the ramble. Yeah.
In the middle of the song. And they're like, the best one is
they're nonsensical,
Panama.
Too.
Yeah. It's like, yeah, we're running a little bit hot tonight. You can barely see the road from the heat. They're like, what the fuck are you talking about, David Lee Roth? What are you talking about? But I love it. It makes me so happy.
So anyway, Frizz is from Malden. I don't know. She just passed the test right there as far as I'm concerned. Oh, are you, man?
Well, no. It's like a love of like either shitty rock music or like a love of Tupac.
Or like a,
and I love both.
Or a love of
Thank
great
you.
Restaurant variety. Yeah.
Malden, taste the world.
Do you come from a big family?
I don't actually. I have two older, much older stepbrothers, and otherwise it's just me.
Cool.
So I'm spoiled.
Were you always into comedy growing up?
So my mom will tell you that I was. I thought I was going to be like a very serious theater person. But my mom will tell you that like at age 5, I was doing my Linda Richman impersonation. Like I was doing coffee talk on Christmas Eve for my relatives. Like, so you have to sit down and you have to watch me. And I was like making my cousin do it and being like very aggressive with rules and like what he had to do and how he had to be my sidekick. But no, I went to college for theater. I worked a little bit in professional theater for a little while, and I very, very much thought that I was going to be an actress, which is why I don't have a Boston accent, even though I grew up 4 miles outside of the city. And then
you can do one, I'm assuming, though.
If I've had a few. No, I can slip back into it. It's really funny. If I'm talking to my dog, I'll slip into it. I'll be just like, Zebby, get in your room. You know, like, Zebby, come over here. But in normal speaking voice, it doesn't. So it's, I don't know, it's weird. It doesn't come naturally to me anymore.
I feel like I in scenes, if I'm just trying to vary up my persona a little, I'll just give myself a exaggerated, and I already have a pretty strong one, but I'll exaggerate a little bit more.
Yeah. The Baby Giraffes have this...
oh, yeah, Debbie and Donna.
Debbie and Donna. We have these characters that are supposed to be, like a little bit older than middle-aged women. They work at the fitting room in a Marshall's.
That's great.
And they kind of just talk like this. And they love Rob Gronkowski. And, like, everything is, like, dunks, and they hate Starbucks. And you know they work in a place, and there's a TJ Maxx across the way, but they go to the Olive Garden after work, and it's like very exaggerated.
I want to say that like I saw like if not the first one of the first times that you rolled that out, and like you and Ashley, and I was like, oh man, this is gonna be such like a hack piece or whatever, but it's like it is one of like the fucking best bits that have ever been done at IP in that studio.
It's yeah, it's
like the wizard sketch is like especially really great.
Oh, thank you.
Yeah.
We did a sketch where Debbie and Donna meet a celebrity, and the celebrity they meet is J.K. Rowling, and we like timed it when she was releasing like her first book after Harry Potter. I think it was called Casual Vacancy.
Mm.
And so we had Annie Kazakowicz playing J.K. Rowling because she could sort of do a British accent. And Annie and I were, and Ashley and I rather were Debbie and Donna. And she comes in and we're just, you know, going, what did you write? Are you famous? Who are you? And, you know, we're like giving her the third degree. And at one point she's just like, well, I've written a new novel called Casual Vacancy. And we're like, sounds trashy. And she's just like, well, most people know me for Harry Potter. You know, it's about a young man who discovers at age 11 that he's a wizard. And we're like, it sounds like a euphemism for being gay. like that was maybe the third Debbie and Donna sketch that we wrote. And in that one, we found the voice. We're like, okay,
these
women are just...
That's when Debbie and Donna really came into themselves.
They
were making fun of gay people.
They just didn't understand it.
Yeah, no,
like,
no.
That was the bit. Just like, they just don't know.
No, I mean,
they
like...
They just don't understand.
I think the reason I like that is because, like, honestly, like, you know... I just remember growing up with that.
Yeah, exactly. Like, if you're from around here, you kind of remember growing up with just, like, you know, like, you have your ideas of what the world is, and, like, your parents maybe have their ideas of what the world is, and, like, everybody has this aunt or this uncle,
yeah,
or, like, this person that they know who has just, like, a very narrow idea of what the world is. And it's not that they're mean or whatever, it's just they have blinders on, man.
Yeah.
So that's who those characters are, but that's, like, the extent of my Boston accent, to bring it back to the question.
So at what point did you transition from theater to, did you start with sketch or just start with improv? Or?
I started with stand-up, believe it or not. I took a stand-up class at the Boston Center for Adult Education at the behest of my best friend. She had been nagging me to do it, because she had seen me do a couple curtain speeches at the theater that I was working at the time. And she was like, oh, you always throw some jokes in, like, it's really funny, you should take stand-up. So I took stand-up, and it was with Dana J. Byne. Who sort of poached me from that class and said, hey, you got to go to Improv Boston because I think you would do really well there, and yada, yada, yada. So
really?
Eventually, yeah.
Wow.
So eventually I did it. But it's really funny because I went to Suffolk for college, so I knew, like, all of the people that are in this. Like, I was friends with Tony and Kelly and Trevor, and I was very, very good friends with Patty.
All those seriously bent folks.
Yeah, all those seriously bent folks. I knew Vicky, so it was kind of funny that, like, I didn't go into IA. I went to IB, but it was because Dana was so specifically, you know, like, you gotta come, you gotta do it. So I did that, and it coincided with when I quit my theater job. And so I had all my nights free, I had all my times free, and I just sort of dove right into improv after stand-up.
Did you intend to go back to theater, or do you intend to go back to theater at any point?
I would like to teach theater. You know, I think if I could go back to school and get a degree and find some kind of full-time position where I could teach theater and, like, maybe another subject, I would absolutely do it. But I don't know if I would want to work in professional, like, working theater. Again, I prefer comedy so much more at this point.
I think Jackie Arco has a similar story where she was exclusively theater and then...
Oh, so
it's really funny.
So here's a fun story. So, like, when... Amy and Annie and I first got cast on the Buskers together. Like, the first time I ever saw Annie, I was like, you know, I thought she was Hannah Full. Like, serious case of mistaken identity. They don't look
They look enough alike.
The resemblance isn't as strong as it is today.
As it used to be. They used to have, like, a very similar haircut. And the counterpart to that was that Jackie Arco and Hannah Full were always together. And Annie and I were always together, so I used to get mistaken for Jackie sometimes. And, like, our personalities are kind of similar. Like, we both had short brown hair. We both really liked whiskey. We were both kind of just like, well, fuck you.
Yeah.
You know, so that used to happen. So Annie and I actually impersonated Jackie and Hannah at their kerfuffle once.
They liked it, though. You told me this, like, a billion times, but I want to say that was my idea because, like, you've been saying that, like, I remember, like, we were in the green room and we were talking about that. And, like, I was just like, you totally got to write a sketch about this or something like that.
I honestly don't know. I don't remember whose idea it was. I just remember that we talked about it for, like, 4 months before it actually happened. Because they didn't invite us to do the kerfuffle right away. Like, the kerfuffle, you have to be invited to, like, even submit, and then they pick from who's submitted. So we were students, and then we finally got on a cast. And so when we were on a cast in June, we were like, when are you going to invite us? And they were just like, kind of like, well, we think you're ready. And a couple months later, they invited us. And the first time they invited us, we were like, well, it doesn't really fit with the theme. And I don't want to do it like the first time, because what if they're pissed? So we waited until the second time.
Yeah, I filmed that.
Yeah, Jack, there's like footage of it somewhere, but it went over really well. Like, you can hear them laughing louder than anybody else.
Oh my god, it was amazing.
It was really funny.
I was recently on the other end of one of those situations.
Really?
Someone impersonated you?
Yeah, they did a roast for Kelly Dooley, who just left. So some Steve Dewar, who's on Improv Asylum House teams and on Just Suspects, he similar look as me, so he just borrowed one of my hats and then just talked in a really monotone voice and talked about a podcast the whole time. And
wait, did he tell you that that's a good idea, or did you just borrow your hat?
He texted me in the morning and asked me if it was okay. I'm like, yeah, go for it. But then I was there, and everybody was, like, turning around at me and, like, trying to gauge my reaction. I'm like, I don't care. You know, it's funny. It's kind of an honor, you know, that somebody even thinks to do that, you know? So
yeah.
I was happy with it.
That's a very good reaction, but at the same time, I'm kind of mad that, like, you didn't, like, you know, feign outrage.
Yeah.
What is this? What is this? Yeah.
Oh, man. No. Well, like, the nature of the kerfuffle, like, for those of you listening who don't know what the kerfuffle is that you submit, like, the title of your show, how long it's going to be, and who's in it, if you even know who's going to be in it, and they pick based on that. So, like, they don't know the content, so they didn't know that we were impersonating them, so everybody, same thing, like, looked to them. But no one feigned out. They were, like, just immediately laughing from the start.
Nice.
But yeah, people come to the kerfuffle. I'll plug that. I love that.
Yeah, it's a good show. Very good show.
I keep meaning to check it out. It sounds very strange.
No, it's great. It really is great.
Honestly, it's a good show, period. But if, like, you're involved in the improv or comedy scene in the Boston area, then it is, like, really not something that you should miss out on. I mean, it's a fantastic.
Yeah.
It's very good that it's grown as it has.
Like, there are a lot of jokes in it that are for everybody, but if you happen to be part of the Boston comedy scene, like, they're also in jokes.
Mm-hmm.
So the kerfuffle is, what is it, the third Wednesday? The third Thursday of every month at 9:30 at Improv Boston.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Plug.
If you email Jackie Arco, Hannah Full, or Casey Malone, they'll put you on the email list. They'll let you know when submissions are being announced.
If they think you're ready.
Yeah.
So did you go through the Improv Boston Training Center?
Yep, I took the curriculum there for training for improv, and then I took the curriculum there for training for sketch for at least two classes. So this was a while ago. This was in, like, 2011 through 2012. And in June of 2012, before I had finished classes, I did get cast on a Herald Night team. I stayed on Herald Night for about a year.
Wasn't that team?
It was the Buskers.
Buskers!
With Jack.
Yeah.
And with Andy Kazakowicz, and with Connor Allen and Eric Volkert, and a bunch of other people. Ben Snitkoff was our director. But what's funny about is when I took classes, but somewhere in the curriculum, I made friends with like a bunch of people that are still kind of going strong at IB. And what I've noticed from a lot of people who have gone through the curriculum is, like, they've made, like, a couple friends, like, maybe one or two, but most people, you know, they're doing it for different reasons, or they come all the way up through, or, like, they move right away or whatever. But, like, my group ended up being, it's me, it was Annie Kazakowicz, it was Tim Stolnick, it was Holly Tarnauer, it was Tom Towell, and Eric Frieden, and just, like, a bunch of other people who are kind of either still in the Boston community or like have maybe just left the Boston community and have just done so, so, so well. Mm-hmm. So it was really awesome to come up with people who were so good and like so like-minded and so like driven to do this. Oh, and Ben Sandler.
Mm-hmm. I think it's a great time in, and I've only been in the community about 2.5 years, but just seeing all the people like their 20s that are just so good and like they're only going to get better and
yeah
you're just
very much
waiting
so, yeah.
for them to blow up almost
yeah
but they're all cool and they're all friends and they're mm-hmm. all, you know, it's they just make up this community. I think it's incredible. So where you are now in like your improv career, comedy career, how do you feel and like where do you ultimately want to go?
So I'm really happy to be cast on Face Off. And it was a team that, like, my first round of general auditions, I got called back for it, and I was like, that's the one that I want. And I got Harold Knight, and I really, really liked Harold Knight.
Were you always good at games?
No, I was terrible at games. That's why I didn't get on Face Off for a while. Line games, I don't know, they were, like, petrifying to me. But since I've been on it, like, I really like to play Yo Mama, I really like to play Sex With Me. I still hate 185 because, you know, the build-up is so wordy and awful. It almost, like, ruins the joke.
I'm going to, like, text John Serpico every single day. It's like, hey, I think you guys should play. Connor Allen is going to text John Serpico every single night. It's like, hey, dude, I think, yeah, you should play 185 tonight.
That would be awful for me. But no, other people are really good at it. So, you know, far be it for me to say, like, please don't do this game. But please don't do this game, John. But I'm really happy with it. I think I am, like, very likely to stay in Boston. I like Boston. I don't know that I want to move. There was a time where I thought, like, New York or Chicago. Probably not L.A., but definitely New York or Chicago. Mm. So if I ever were to move, it would be one of those locations. But as of right now, it's not really on the horizon.
Yeah.
Cool. And, Jack, what about you? Where are you from originally?
Oh, man. So I grew up in Merrimack, Massachusetts. That's up north, and I spent my more formative years from middle school on in Southborough, Massachusetts. I went to high school at St. John's in Shrewsbury.
I went to Catholic high school, too.
Oh, yeah, yeah. No, I was in Catholic school for 8 years, so
12,
high school. Damn. Yeah, man. Yeah, it's like you're a nun or something.
Yep, exactly like I'm a nun.
So at St. John's was my first exposure to improv in any capacity. I didn't do it, but I was like, I was not, God, I had problems when I was a kid, man, like, the only people I really got along with were the improv crowd. That's who I sat with at lunch, but I would never join or anything like that, because I was very much of the mentality, it's like, I'm in high school, like the Butters impression, you know, it's like, well, hey, I'm in high school, you know, I need to take this seriously, that sort of thing.
That's really, that's what happened, like, not to interject, but that's exactly what happened to me in college. Like, I was friends with all of the seriously bent people. And, like, I would talk to them and be like, oh, man, that sounds so fun. Anyways, off to theater rehearsal because I'm serious, you know, and I would, like, pull my backpack up and, like, shimmy away like a douchebag.
I don't think I ever once said that thought high school was going to take this seriously.
In college, I just decided that I was going to do everything different. So I signed up for, I went to improv, like, I auditioned. I didn't get into the main cast, but I did get into, like, you know, like, the ancillary cast. So that was pretty good. That was pretty good. That was my first audition ever, and, like, I'm pretty proud of that. Improv at Fairfield was really good. There are a lot of, like, that, they had a real golden crop, which, like, I came in on the tail end of, I think. And I think a big reason for that was because they used to offer an improv class that would give you course credit for if, like, you took this improv class. And so a lot of people who are just, like, pretty much looking for an easy A and would otherwise never go anywhere near this stuff would take this class, fall in love with it, then they would join the main cast and that sort of thing. And I thought that was a great idea. They discontinued that the year that I came in, which, you know, oh well. But, like, you know, regardless, it created a very strong crop of improvisers at Fairfield University, and you can see a bunch of them now. A bunch of them are at the Magna Theater. Some of them are at IB. Like a bunch of them are at the Pit, you know, it's like, yeah, you know, it's like, so it was 4 very good years and I really got into it. We did the Herald a lot there and that's when I, started doing that and that sort of thing. So I gained a real appreciation for long form there. Yeah.
Cool. My best friend growing up went to Fairfield.
Oh, really?
He's actually a producer on Letterman now. So,
yeah. Oh, really?
Yeah. I don't think they were into improv. They were all into, like, producing television and
Oh, well, that sounds about right. Yeah, sure.
But they were all really funny people. And I went and visited them a couple times. I really liked it up there. It was a cool spot.
Mm-hmm.
How did you find yourself in Boston?
Well, my friend Evan Barden was a performer at IB for the longest time. He's actually a Harold Knight original, so he was doing that. Evan was an RA when I was in school. Now he's still performing at the Magnet, the Pit, that sort of thing. And so I had more of an inclination to come over here. Like when I came back home, I worked in New York for a little bit, like, you know, really just like, you know, less than 6 months before, like, you know, it's like, oh, sorry, that didn't work out.
Were you doing improv out there as well?
You know, I took a couple classes at the Magnet, but like that was the furthest that I ever got.
Well, you weren't there long enough, really.
No, I wasn't.
Right?
I wasn't. And so anyway, I came back here. Did without it for a little bit because I was dead broke, but that wasn't working out. I was losing my mind. So I became an intern here. I helped produce the original podcast, actually. How about that? Man, that never even crossed my mind. My level one instructor was Hannah Full. And in my class, actually, was Nate Lopez. And we talk about this a lot lately.
Nate Lopez.
Yeah, no, it was really fun. I mean, like, I think that was – I don't know if this is true, but I think that was Nate's first exposure to improv. I've been doing it for a few years, and so, you know, I was kind of like, you know, like, I don't even know, you know, God, I don't know what I was, but...
Oh, I hope you were super condescending to Nate.
No, you know, honestly, I don't...
I love Nate, I just want that.
Yeah, no, so do I. Nate's a great guy.
Well, there is something when you take, because I recently took level one at IB, after going through training center, and I'm not a great improviser, but...
But, like, you know what you're doing.
Yeah, so, just, it is... Interesting, because everybody thinks you're like amazing. You're like, hey, God, calm down, I'm okay. You know?
I was kind of like that. I mean,
that's sort of a fun game to play, though. Of like, who's your first improv teacher?
Hannah Full. Yeah.
Was it Hannah? Who was yours?
How was Nate when he was starting?
Nate was good. Yeah. Nate was good. Nate, he was still learning. Like, he was still learning and everything like that. But like, you could see that he had like the right inclinations and that sort of thing that he could build on. I remember, like, in Buskers, like, I was cast 6 months before Amy, I remember, like, when Connor Allen, who I think is one of the best improvisers in the city, I remember when he was bad, but, you know, it's like, it was the same sort of thing, you know, it's like, oh, man, you know, it's like, he's got good stuff, he just needs to learn how to build on all
of that. So when I got cast, like, my biggest thing was I was super nervous to go out with Connor because he would always throw out these initiations at me of just, like, I have to help get my grandmother into the back of this Ford Fiesta. And I'd just be like, hey, Dad, because I was super inexperienced. You know, like, how's this okay Cupid date going?
One night, Amy Frizzy and I were watching the Bruins with her then-roommate, Patrick O'Connor. And we came up with the idea to start this Twitter account called,
Connor Allen,
which we still run, not as often as we do, but it's called Connor Allen Initiations. And people still submit to it all the time. I'm just gonna read what like a few from it. It's fantastic because the Deborah, I can't fly out to Birmingham. Macklemore needs a stunt double. I had no idea this massage was a hands-on massage. Look, I don't have time for this. I'm the mayor, and there's a panther on the loose.
I think my absolute favorite one was just like, I can't talk. I have to go collect Coke cans so I can get into Six Flags for cheap all summer long. Like, it's so funny.
He gives you a lot to work with if you could just get past your initial shock.
I mean, that spoke, like, great volumes to my inexperience at the time, but I didn't know what to do with it. Like, and after a few months, I was just like, oh, no, this is gold.
He's Mick Napier's wet dream.
So you went through the whole training center.
I went through the whole training center system, the old system, actually. And then I got cast on Buskers, like, after about a year. So that was back in 2011. So we did that. Then I was on Intervention for about 2 years, directed by Laurie Strauss. That was a great team. That had about three separate incarnations of it. Then I was on Eddie. That was another really great team. Like, a lot of current faces of Harold Knight and such. Got their start on that team.
What's the experience of being on a Harold Knight team for several runs and then it ending? Is it a disappointing when that happens?
You know, it really depends. Sometimes it can be bittersweet. Sometimes it can feel appropriate. Sometimes it can be a big disappointment. You know, I've been very happy with all the runs of most of the teams that I've been on. I've been very zen when they come to a close. I mean, also, it's very rarely a total shock. Like, you know, if, like, the producers, like, want to, like, you know, shake things up, they're going to, like, you know, soften the blow and, like, kind of give you a feel for what's happening. But, like, you know, I've been with Harold Knight for about 4 years now. That sounds about right. And, you know, nothing but a positive experience. I love the Harold. I love the things that it offers. I love how it speaks to life, and I try to extrapolate from it. And, like, you know, not to get too serious, but I, like, it's a very important part of what I do. Yeah.
I've heard the term the perfect Harold thrown around sometimes.
Sure.
Have you had that experience, do you think?
Once or twice. Yeah. I mean, like, you know, in, like, the scope of the Harolds that I've done, mm-hmm. I've seen the perfect Harold done a bunch of times. Like, I've experienced it a couple of times. I want to say that Buskers did one time.
We did one time. I remember there was one scene. It was when, like, Elizabeth Warren and John
Kerry
were
one,
running
yeah.
against
mm-hmm,
each other.
Mm-hmm.
That's, like, I remember the Harold, like, in its entirety of being really good, but, like, that one specific scene I just remember from...
So that was so weird because, like, I was, I was playing,
that was, like, our only good Harold.
I was, like, I was playing Scott Brown, like...
It was Scott Brown, not John Kerry.
I was playing Scott Brown, and
somebody else was playing Elizabeth Warren.
The debate had just happened 2 hours earlier, and so I had watched it because, you know,
of course... We were very on the pulse.
But Ben pointed out that, you know, it's like, well, you know, Jack, the rest of these people were at Harold Knight, and so they probably didn't... I mean, it was a great scene, but it was like, oh, man, you're...
But, I mean, people knew, like, the climate...
No, I mean, it worked out great.
We was in fucking Cambridge. Everyone knew.
Yeah, so it was, like, political commentary on my part. It was like I was playing a stuttering Scott Brown, like...
You kept melting.
Yeah, who was, like...
Literally, Jack would, like, dissolve into the stage, and then he would pop back up with another comment, and then dissolve.
Was melting, yeah.
Who was playing... Oh, Annie was playing Elizabeth Warren.
That's right, yeah.
And then the button on it was, I think it was me, and I came out and I was just like, this message has been approved by Elizabeth Warren, as if it were like a commercial the whole time. And I think that still might be like the biggest laugh I've ever gotten.
Dan Chapman.
Outside of like a sex with me joke.
In a separate Harold, Dan Chapman and I also had a very good scene where like, I forget which one of us fucked this up, but like.
Probably you.
We didn't, yeah, probably me, but we weren't. We talked to each other in like the wrong angles, like we weren't facing each other when we talked to each other. And, like, we just ended up making a game of it. Like, we ended up doing, like, 360-degree, like, you know, like, those, like, upside-down, like, you know, that painting with the upside-down staircases. It's like we were doing a scene in that.
Really
then we had a pizza
was
delivery guy.
MC Escher?
Yeah,
Escher?
Exactly. Yeah, we had, like, a pizza delivery guy enter from, like, you know, the corner. It was, like, the upper corner.
That's
and
great.
It was, like, yeah.
That's great. I'm not even in the audience for that show.
Why do you ask about the Perfect Harold?
I've only had limited experience with the Harold that Just Suspects had out.
It's a fantastic form.
I enjoyed it quite a bit, but I don't know. I'm gonna probably try out for IB general auditions.
Cool.
I'm hoping to get probably on a Harold team. I like what I've experienced with the Harold.
Are you listening, Mike? Yeah.
I like being able when you're not in a scene and you know what the beats are from the first. I don't even know the term, so round, and you're in the second.
Yeah, so, like, you would, like, refer to, like, scenes as scenes and, like, the first, like, round of scenes as a beat.
Yeah, yeah. So, like, the first beat scenes.
After the first beat scenes, if you're not in, like, scene 2A, you have time to think of, like, a really good offer or think of something.
Yeah,
to,
like, a second beat initiative.
Yeah, and, I don't know, I like that a lot.
What did Ben always say? So when Ben Snickoff, when Ben Snickoff was our director, he would kill us whenever we did second beat Batman, because that's like the easiest heighten.
Oh, yeah.
That is the easiest heighten to do. So like any of you Harold Knight listeners out there, the easiest second beat initiation you can do to like heighten two characters is to make one of them fucking Batman or make one of them the president.
Yeah, Ben made it very clear that...
Ben was like, don't do that, you better.
Ben made it very clear that he never wanted to see a Harold go like, you know, from first to second to third beat in the order of president, Batman, God, or something like that.
Somebody did a second beat Batman though, and it was like so as a group, like our Harold team as a group had gone to see The Dark Knight Rises, and
that's right. Mm-hmm.
Somebody did a second beat Batman and it worked so well, and
people
so,
love
like,
Batman.
People love Batman. Well, that's the thing. I mean, it's a little bit of pandering, but the scene worked so well, and like it almost had to be a second beat Batman, so like, you know, we did notes after
the
show.
He was probably cool with
that. We did notes after the show, and he, like, went downstairs, and he just went, okay, you did a second beat back, and it worked. Like, he was so disappointed that it worked.
Oh, man.
So
where you are now, how do you feel, and, like, where do you ultimately want to go?
I'll get to that. Like, to speak a bit more about the Herald, like, you know, I ultimately view this as, like, so, like, the perfect sort of Herald. Like, you know, I kind of view it as, like, you know, planting a seed and then watching it grow into, like, a tree within 30 minutes. Like, you know, you want to start somewhere.
20.
Huh?
20.
Oh, okay, fine, 20 minutes, whatever. Between 20 and 30 minutes. You ultimately, like, want to wind up somewhere that's completely different yet familiar from where you started. I'm an advertising creative. Like, you know, I often am tech. Amy's laughing right now. Thanks, Amy. This is what I do with my life.
You just said I'm a creative.
Well, that's the term, okay? Like, you can't say, like, that's...
Go ahead. I'm so sorry. I'm not saying
okay, anything. Yeah. God, yeah. Jack-McNamara.com, you know, available for hire, maybe for the next week. But often, like, you know, that line of work, I'm a copywriter, is, you know, very similar to improv in the sense that, like, you know, like, you will suddenly have a new client, they will suddenly have a very specific ask, it's not unlike a suggestion, you need to pull something from thin air. So, you know, I'm, like, improv's my love, and, like, you know, advertising, like, that sort of work is my life, and, like, I love how the two intersect each other. I'm surprised that there aren't more people like that in Boston that have that sort of experience. Like, you know, it's changing a little bit.
I've always been interested in it. Like,
yeah.
But I imagine it takes a lot of schooling and all.
It does. It does. You know, and that's the thing. Like, I have a journalism degree. Like, I decided after I graduated that I wanted to make a career change. And so, you know, like, you know, it certainly helps to have the kind of pedigree for it. Like, I'm very much self-taught. I'm very much brought up on my own. I very much have to, you know, depend on my own merits, which, you know, is a double-edged sword. But, you know, it's a really cool thing. I mean, like, you know, I've always felt that improv in this regard is sort of an ace I have up my sleeve because, you know, I very seldomly run into other people that have this way of thinking. Like, you know, I mean... I don't want to put down people that have been, like, you know, professionals in this regard that have been doing this for a very long time and are probably better at it than me and, like, can relate better to a counter client, you know, just to, like, have that kind of unique experience. But, you know, I just feel like I'm, like, the clutch guy.
I've always...
What? In what? In advertising? I really do. I really do. Like,
I know...
Jack-McNamara.com.
Yeah.
Before I got into improv, like, 2.5 years ago, I... didn't really know. I mean, I knew what Whose Line was, but I didn't know really what improv was.
Mm-hmm.
But I think I've always had an improv brain, even though I didn't, you know exactly how to classify it at the time. And, like, I used to sit around this bar, like, every night, and there was this advertising guy that would come in, like, every night, and we were buddies, you know, drinking buddies, so we would just sit there, and, like, the commercials would come on the TV. You couldn't hear them, but we'd just... I would always pick him apart to him and, like, get his, like, feedback on, like, hey, why didn't they try this? Why didn't they add it? You know?
You know, it's weird when, like, Whose Line was on. Like, when I used to watch that show, I never even knew it was improv. Like, I always just thought this was, like, a funny person show. I didn't know there was, like, a term for what they were doing.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Even when I was signing up for classes here, I had no idea exactly what I was getting into. Like, I always point to this. I do this a lot on this podcast, but, like...
Yeah, no, like...
That scares me. Like,
yeah, no, that's... Tom's pointing at the,
More Trust Falls with Ted from Sales.
Yeah, the T, yeah. That's, like, Improv Sounds, we're running that forever.
Their corporate training.
Yeah. I mean, like, that's kind of like any improv theater's, like, bread and butter. Like, you know, that sort of thing. Yeah. No, I mean, like, right, it's weird. Like, no one really knows what improv is. Like, you talk to one person.
It's really fun, like... So my absolute favorite thing is when someone that I work with at my day job finds out that I do improv, and they say, and, like, they've literally all said this, every single person that has found out, well, you're going to get a lot of material work in here, and I want to be like, no, you're fucking boring, and out of context, your shit is not funny.
Right.
Like, unless someone works here, no one's going to get my joke about so-and-so in the shipping department, you know, like, no one's going to think that that's funny.
I've got that a lot, too.
Right, like, everybody gets that, and the other thing is, like, the confusion with stand-up, you know,
yep.
people think I do stand-up, like, I have relatives, they're just like, my knee piece of stand-up at Improv Boston.
I think a big problem with that is, like, you know, other than Whose Line, I mean, by the way, those performers are truly exceptional. I mean...
Well, now that I'm on Face Off, I get to say, yeah, I'm on a show that does things kind of like Whose Line Is It Anyways? But when I was on Herald, and, like, it's really funny, I was talking about this with my mom the other day, and I was just like, do you remember when I tried to explain to you what the Herald was? Because my cousin had asked me what type of shows that I did and, you know, what I was up to. And actually about this podcast in specific. And I was just like, do you remember when I tried to tell you what the Herald was? And she said, yes. And I said, well, it might be something like that. And she was like, I don't want to hear it. My cousin was just like, I trust your judgment.
I think improv, like, outside of, like, you know, something that, like, you manage very carefully, like in a situation like Curb Your Enthusiasm or something like that, I think that, like, the more you, like, you delve into longer form, like, the harder it becomes to televise, because so much of it depends on your ability to relate to the audience,
right.
And so much of it is fueled off what the audience is giving you.
And so much of it is very hard to explain. So, like, can you imagine, like, trying to pitch a TV show that's, like, based on long-form improv? Like,
right.
I mean, like, a stand-up, you can kind of come in halfway through the act and pick up what he's putting down.
Right. Well, and like,
but
I think that's why stand-up works so well as sitcoms. Like, that's why Seinfeld works so well. And, like, why people thought in theory that Mulaney was going to work so well was because, like, the stories, and, like, why Louis C.K. works so well is, like, the stories that are pitched in this small bit of stand-up. It's almost like a Bruce Springsteen song where, like, you just know the characters so fucking well.
Yeah.
Like, you just understand the story so well that, like, you can pick up this stand-up comedian who's basically, like, a blank slate most of the time and plop him down amongst all this insanity that's happening around him that he's talking about, and it works, and that's why it works in, like, that small sitcom, like, genre.
Right.
Back when I was trying out open mics and that sort of thing, because, you know, of course, I was just stunned by how different an animal stand-up was, like, you know, I mean...
I like stand-up.
Yeah,
like, I liked doing it when I did it. It sort of got to the point where I was just like, well, I'm going to go gung-ho for stand-up, or I'm going to go gung-ho for improv, and I went for improv. But, like, I've thought about going back to doing open mics. Like, I did a sort of an improvised stand-up a month ago, and it was, like, supposed to be based on crowd work.
Oh, yeah.
And I went and I did it, and I actually had a really good time, and there were a couple of people who were, like, Caitlin Buckley was in the audience, and she does stand-up all the time, and she was just like, was that your first time? You should do this. And I was like, well, I did a little bit in 11 or 12, and... She's like, you should get back into it. So I've definitely thought about getting back into it. The thing I will say that's different about improv versus stand-up and even sketch is that when you write a joke and you, like, workshop it and you fucking figure it out and, like, you poured yourself into this joke and, like, you perform it on stage and it gets a laugh, it's so much more gratifying than going out and doing, like a dick joke or whatever.
I only had one joke that ever got a laugh. Like, I had so many that failed, like, fell flat on their face.
Did you? Yeah, I don't know.
Yeah.
But, like, when you can do it.
Yeah.
Didn't it feel, like, amazing?
It did.
Like,
yeah.
You've done stand-up, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, like, it feels amazing.
Yeah. So I know you guys have a heart out. So do you have... Well, do you have anything you want to leave us with? And then on top of that, do you have any plugs you want to get out there?
Yeah, I'll plug Nixon. Come see us. Like, this is actually one of the better teams that I've been on. Like, you know, it's like it's a really cool run. I think that's saying something. So it's really cool. We're Wednesdays at 9:30 at Herald Night. And also be sure, like, this is on May 15th. That's the Friday. Like, be sure to come see Laugh McNamara with Brian Donnelly and I. That this show is like, you know, an acid trip without drugs. I
can attest that Laugh McNamara is probably the funniest improv show I've ever seen.
Yeah, no, Brian is just Brian is something otherworldly. He's like Mork from Mork and Mindy.
he's really fantastic.
And and we don't do this show too often. Actually, this will probably be the last time we do it.
Get
so,
your tickets now.
Yeah, so like honestly, don't miss out on that. You know, Frizz.
So I guess like my imparting note for improv would be just fucking do it. Like go up on stage with nothing in your head and just say the first thing that comes into your mind and make it work. And you'll feel great about it
afterwards.
Yeah,
anybody can do improv. I truly believe that. I believe that the people who are not inclined to do improv are probably better at doing it once they get into their groove.
Yeah, anyone can do it. It's fun. You just have to sort of...
It's all about getting over fear.
Let yourself go and stop worrying about looking stupid.
It's also, like, and, you know, I've alluded to this, how I use it as, like, a professional tool and that sort of thing, but it's an invaluable life skill. I mentioned, like, how, like, you know, I had problems growing up when I was in high school and everything. This was
a comedian had problems growing up.
You might even say that improv saved my life. Tonight, I'm Tom Boyer. This has been the podcast.
Improv did save me. I got into improv right after I was out of like a heavy relationship. Mm-hmm. So it was definitely it was definitely nice. Mm-hmm. But anyways, plugs. Mm-hmm. Face Off is Saturday night at Improv Boston at 10 p.m. It's a wonderful show. Baby Giraffes will probably be doing something for our 3-year anniversary in June. If not, we'll definitely be doing stuff in the fall. We are reconvening because one of our members had a baby, and her name is Everly, and she is freaking adorable. And one of our other members moved out to L.A. to become a screenwriter. So, Caitlin Durante, if you're listening, I miss you, and also I hope you're doing well. And I miss you a lot.
All right, well.
I'm glad I ended on that really sick note of me listening.
I miss you a lot.
Thanks
a lot, guys.
Thanks, Tom, for having us.
And thanks for listening. Bye.